in the depletion region, there's hardly any electrons and there's hardly any holes. But there are still the donor and acceptor atoms, which are fixed in the lattice. So you have phosphorus in the silicon lattice. It's got four silicon neighbors and it can't move. And if it's lost its electron in that region, then the phosphorus donor is positively charged. And you may have boron acceptors, which are also fixed in the lattice on the p side. And if they've lost their hole, then they're negatively charged. And what happens is you end up with a charge distribution that looks like this. There's a bit of approximation that it's really square like this, but it's easier to integrate than the real one. So I'm going to use, this is called the depletion approximation, to say that the whole concentration drops so fast that you can approximate the charge density as just a rectangular shape like this. And I drew it so that the n side is doped a little higher than the p side. That's not always the case, but I drew it that way, and that makes the n side where the positive doping is tall and thin, and on the other side it's shorter and a little bit wider. But the area is the same on both sides because the total charge, positive charge and negative charge, must be the same. This is the boundary between the n-type semiconductor and the p-type semiconductor. At the boundary, there's an electric field pointing from n to p, but both n and p are conductors, and there's zero electric field in the p-type material, and there's zero electric field in the n-type material. So if these charges didn't balance, then you could draw a Gauss box around it and say there must be an electric field traveling outside. But if these charges are balanced, then you can draw a box around it and no electric field lines will go through that box because the total charge inside the box is zero. So this is the situation that you get. You get a wider depletion width on the side that has the lower doping. And if this is what the charge density looks like, then we can apply Gauss's law. So Gauss's law looks like this. Charge density over the relative dielectric constant times the permittivity constant. This is Gauss's law. And in one dimension, it's just the derivative of the electric field is rho over like that. So in order to calculate the electric field, I have to integrate the charge density once. And this charge density is easy to integrate because it's just a constant in this region. When we integrate, we need to know the boundary condition. And the boundary condition is that the electric field is zero inside the conductor, the p-type conductor. And it just becomes finite in this depletion region where the carriers have been removed. And so the electric field is zero to here, and then we start to integrate it. And when you integrate a constant, you get a slope, constant slope like this, until we get to the p-n junction where the charge changes from positive to negative. And then we integrate further, and we get here is a negative slope, here is a positive slope, because it's a positive charge. And so I have a different slope here, but because the areas are equal, when I get to the edge, is xn is the edge of the depletion width on the n side, the electric field goes back to zero. So this is the form of the electric field in a p-n junction. It's zero at the edges, and it's got a maximum right where it shifts from p to n. And if I know the electric field, I can calculate the potential as well. So the relationship between electric field and electrostatic potential is that the potential is minus the integral of the electric field. As a one-dimensional problem, again, I've got a linear electric field. When I integrate that once, I get a quadratic potential. And then I need to have boundary conditions again because I'm integrating, I have integration constants. And what I can do is choose the zero of the electrostatic potential. And it's convenient to choose the zero of the electrostatic potential to be at here. So I choose the zero of the electrostatic potential to be at the p-n junction. And then I integrate this, and you get quadratic terms. And if you look, then what happens is that here at x equals zero, the potential on the this is what the quadratic term looks like on the p side, and this is the quadratic term on the n side. And so it's starting at x squared, and then there's a it grows quadratically, but then there's a linear term that you add to it as well. And they are parabolas that look a bit like this. If I draw that conduction band, it goes, it looks like a parabola that starts like that, and then it's got a constant slope at this point, and then the other parabola on the other side matches it, and it goes over like that. So this is a parabola, this is a parabola. And it gives this bend from of the conduction band from one side to the other side. And then we can figure out what a VBI is from this by just taking the value of this potential at what's called here XP and XN. This is the edge of the depletion curve. So these formulas for electric field and potential are only valid in the depletion width. And I can fill in XP and XN and these formulas, and that will give me a relationship between these expressions for XP and XN and VBI. Because VBI, I already know. And using that, you can calculate what the depletion width is. You can calculate how many microns wide it is. Because we know VBI.